Hello, everyone, and hello especially today to Dr. Becky Lynn. We are Just Ask, which is a sexual health panel of experts. We, Heather and I, started this advocacy panel back in 2019 and really just made it as a safe space for patients to ask the questions that they may be interested in, hear a little bit more about sexual medicine, the different topics that surround that, and just have a place where they can feel safe. So our mission here at Just Ask is that we are a healthcare platform dedicated to providing evidence-based information by a multidisciplinary team of sexual health experts in order for individuals to make informed and optimal sexual health decisions and to learn and understand the issues that surround sexual medicine. Our vision at Just Ask is that we believe in the creation of a safe and non-judgmental environment of sexual health and sexual health medicine and wellness for men and women to engage with experts in the area of health and like members of their community on the most intimate topics and questions. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Heather, who's going to introduce our amazing guest today and the topic that we are going to be letting you guys know about.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back again, our monthly Just Ask. Today, I have the amazing Dr. Becky Lynn with us. I'm going to talk a little bit about how awesome she is and all the things she has done for women's health in general with her amazing private practice and everything in that nature as well. So Dr. Becky Lynn is the director of Evora Center for Menopause and Sexual Health. She's a board certified gynecologist and a trained sexual counselor and menopause provider. She's adjunct associate professor of obstetrics and gynecology at St. Louis University School of Medicine. She is a world-renowned expert in sexual medicine and menopause. She's a frequent invited speaker on women's sexual health and appears regularly on numerous podcasts, television shows, radio shows, and in print. She's known for her patient partner education YouTube channel and her research on the effects of cannabis on the sexual experience. She has been featured in More magazines and Self magazines, as well as Martha Stewart Living. She's an international fellow for the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health, as well as serving as the advocacy chairman and member of the board. She's immediate past president of the St. Louis Gynecologic Society and on the advocacy committee for the North American Menopause Society. Woohoo, she's a Southern California Valley girl. I can really jive with that, and I'll have to fill you in after our Just Ask, Dr. Lynn, as well as completed her undergraduate degree in economics and Spanish at the University of California, Berkeley. She graduated from medical school at Georgetown in Washington, D.C., and completed her residency at Washington University in St. Louis. She also received her MBA from St. Louis University. She practiced at the University of Missouri Columbia before joining the faculty at St. Louis in 2015, where she's adjunct professor of obstetrics and gynecology. She completed sex counselor training with Sexual Medicine Associates in Florida and is a certified menopause provider with the North American Menopause Society. She has two wonderful teenage children. She enjoys running, foreign language, and travel. And one of her most memorable adventures was biking from London to Paris to raise money for breast cancer. So pretty awesome, amazing woman, mom, entrepreneur, doctor. I could go on and on. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Whenever I'm feeling down, I'm going to come to you, Heather, and be like, tell me that again. You know, you make me sound so amazing. But yeah, so I'm really excited to be on the show, and I appreciate you guys having me.
Yes, we are just so grateful to you. So because it's October and it's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I feel like it's so important just to take cancer in and of itself as a specialty, I really wanted to focus this month on cancer and intimacy and the effects of it around sexual health. And I know that you are such a guru in this, and there is no better person to really kind of hone in and talk to us about it. Are you seeing it? Is it common? I just want to debunk so much for our listeners.
Yeah. So it's definitely common. You know, sexual dysfunction is highly prevalent in in many cancers, not all cancers, but many of them. But the one that I see the most is breast cancer, because many breast cancers have estrogen receptors on their cells. And so the way that we prevent recurrence is by giving substances or medicines that block that receptor and prevent a cancer cell from growing. But when we block the estrogen receptor, we throw women into all of a sudden out of the blue menopause. And menopause just wreaks havoc on your intimate life. The common things that I see really, especially in breast cancer survivors, are low libido and painful sex. So when you block that estrogen, the tissue in the vagina changes. When you have hormones around, it's thick and it's moist and it's stretchy. It makes lubrication on its own and there's lots of blood flowing to it. So sex feels good. But when you lose those hormones, the tissue becomes thin and dry. It doesn't stretch. There's less blood flow going to it. And the vagina can get shorter and not as wide. And so that can cause a lot of painful sex. And, we always think, if older women are going to get cancer, do they care about having sex? But they do. So there's myth number one, older people don't have sex. That is a total myth because yes they do.
Yes.
Sex is an important part of a healthy relationship. And then also breast cancer. And I don't know if it's just that I'm getting older or women with breast cancer getting younger. Either way, I've seen women with breast cancer in their 30s and that have very active sexual lives, and that just gets nixed when they have breast cancer. The other thing I see a lot is low libido, and part of that, it can be due to painful sex. If sex hurts, why do it? That's just good judgment. But also when you block the hormones in your brain, then their hormones are one part of what controls sex drive, not all of it, but it can also wreak havoc on your brain. And then if you think about a cancer diagnosis, maybe you have depression that can lower your sex drive. Maybe you're on an antidepressant like Prozac, Zoloft, any of that class of medicines, which we call the SSRIs, that can lower your sex drive. So, apart from the cancer experience itself, it's ripe for intimacy problems. And good news, women with breast cancer are living longer and longer and longer. So yes, survivorship and quality of life really comes into play, for women that live a long time, or, maybe they never have a recurrence, knock on wood.
Right. You've really tapped onto some things that are so important that we don't think about. I think sometimes when we wear our medical hat, that's all we wear. And you also wear that sex counselor hat. And so we know that like sex and cancer and those pieces are such that biopsychosocial approach. Yes. Can you talk a little bit about how sometimes you see somebody and they may it's only medical, or, you need to see therapy, or, you need PT. I kind of want to talk about what it looks like encompassing all of that for the cancer survivor and what that looks like.
Absolutely. So, most things sexual don't happen in a vacuum, because when your sex life is disrupted, it spills over into the relationship. It spills over into mental health.
Absolutely.
And so, the way that I use the sexual counseling versus, my doctor degree is when I do my history, I get a very thorough history, and I do approach this the biopsychosocial. So, you look at all their medical issues, mental health. Then you also look at the relationship. How's the relationship? How's communication? That's more on the counselor side. Mm-hmm. You might ask them, what did your family teach you about sex? Did they teach you anything about sex? Yes. That's the more social side too. So I feel like when I approach sexual problems, there are treatments for all aspects. And so sometimes I feel like if you don't have an answer for something, you're not going to ask about it. So that being a sexual counselor, I have an answer for, communication problems. How do you communicate about your likes and dislikes? How can you get to where you want to be sexually? But basically, I just approach it when I take my history from the medical standpoint, but also from the social psycho standpoint.
How can patients advocate for themselves? Like if they're getting a provider that may just blow them off, or even their cancer doctors, I don't mean to bash anything about the oncologists because their work is so important, but a lot of them are like, okay, I got the cancer. I don't have time for all this. So how does a patient advocate for themselves to kind of get those questions?
The one thing I want to say about oncology is that they don't have an answer to the question, right? Because they're not gynecologists. So many times they don't ask, which, you know, I sort of understand because they're, you know, you're going to be like, oh, you have painful sex. Okay. You know, it's nice when you want to be like, oh, well, I can refer you to somebody. I can send you to somebody. And I've even had an oncologist in my community who said she never asked about sexual problems until she found out about my practice, because now she has a solution. She can actually send people.
Yes.
But what I would say for patients, as far as advocating for themselves, you know, it's really hard nowadays to pick the right information on the internet. There's so much false information. But, you know, you can always find a North American Menopause Society certified provider, because they definitely have training in how we manage vaginal dryness due to menopause, due to breast cancer. There was a paper that, like a white paper, you know, that kind of sums up all of the research. Yes. NAMS is a scientific organization. You know, it's good quality. It's been vetted. It's written by leaders in the field. But there is a white paper on treating vaginal dryness due to menopause in women with breast cancer. And it covers also women at high risk for developing breast cancer. So if you see a provider and they give you an answer that you're not happy with, you can always look for a NAMS provider. You just go to their website, which is menopause.org, and you can find hopefully a provider in your area to help you with that. And, you know, the way that I look at it is you're not going to offend your doctor by going somewhere else. And, you know, if my patients want to get a second opinion, more power to them, because sometimes two heads are better than one. And maybe that other provider will have a different option and I'll be like, oh yeah, why didn't I think of that? So, you know, I think people feel guilty, like, especially when they have a longstanding relationship with their physician, should they see somebody else? But, you know, I think if you don't get the answer that you want, then get a second opinion.
Absolutely. You've tapped on NAMS, which is such a phenomenal resource for them. But what about, you mentioned, obviously, we're seeing it in younger women. Do you have a good resource where they can go to as well? Because I know NAMS may not feel comfortable navigating that because they don't want to think, oh my gosh, menopause or
but
they're kind of forced surgically sometimes in that direction.
Right. Or by the hormone blockade. You can also get good information from ISWISH, which is the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health. Awesome. Great organization, you know, very scientific organization. So you can also look there. And actually, ISWISH is in the process of creating a patient-facing website, which will have... you know, scientifically based, vetted information, just because, you know, if you don't know where to look, you could easily fall down a rabbit hole of quackery. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So, so ISWISH would be another good resource, for women.
Wonderful. I know we don't give medical advice and I don't expect that on here at all, but you've tapped a lot around estrogen. So can we talk about just vaginal estrogen? A lot of, you'll have some oncologists that say, absolutely no. You have some you talk to and you explain to them from our perspective what that looks like. And how does a patient go around dealing with that piece of it?
Yeah. So I'll tell you how I explain it to patients. If somebody comes in with dyspareunia, the sort of the algorithm that I go through is I talk about lubricants and moisturizers, which are non-hormonal. Then I talk about what we know about hormones in breast cancer. So, you know, using low dose vaginal hormones has never been shown in scientific studies to increase the risk of recurrence, but we're all a little afraid because what if some is absorbed systemically and there's a little estrogen floating around, and especially in women on aromatase inhibitors, because women on aromatase inhibitors, these are medicines like letrozole and anastrozole, lower their estrogen levels in their blood even lower than the normal postmenopausal range. So are you negating the effects of an aromatase inhibitor? How much is absorbed into the bloodstream? So I have looked into, and there's published data on the serum level of some of the vaginal products, how much gets into the bloodstream. And it looks like the creams are probably absorbed the most, although it's little, it's not a lot. So I tend to choose other suppositories. There's like a estradiol gel cap or prasterone, and those tend to keep your hormone levels in your blood in the normal postmenopausal range. There's even a study in women on aromatase inhibitors that are using sort of a generic prasterone, which is DHEA, and it showed that their serum levels of estrogen was the same as people getting placebo. So I sort of have choose my go-tos when it comes to a woman with breast cancer.
Yes, absolutely. And I know it, and Tara, kind of talk to us a little bit, like I bring in my pharmacy girl for all of these pieces. What have you seen just from other providers you've talked to on this whole DHEA that Dr. Lynn has brought up? I know that that's kind of becoming more common, and some oncologists are more comfortable with it. Some don't even know about it.
Right. I would right. say that too.
Yeah, I think education is huge, especially with a lot of providers that we've worked with in the past. But I think when it comes from an oncology standpoint, if you're working with providers who are in sexual health or survivorship medicine, they're using DHEA almost as, if you think about the steroid hormone cascade, it is that grandfather or that precursor hormone that the body kind of takes and brings it and breaks it down the pathway that the body needs it the most. So if the patient is lacking in estrogen, it's bringing DHEA down that pathway. And we all can kind of agree, I think collectively, that a vaginal prep is always going to be, for those issues, dyspareunia, atrophy, those types of things, vaginal preps are going to be your go-to, right? I mean, you don't want to put a person on oral or pellet or injectable or sublingual therapy for something that's happening down below the belt. So I think from our standpoint and a lot of patients that we have to kind of remind them, there are estrogen, there are testosterone receptors all in the vaginal canal and vaginal area. If you're putting drug directly at that site, you are ultimately getting that local reaction. And yeah, like Dr. Lynn said, we've seen studies and the systemic absorption is very minuscule, if any. Especially with some of the newer preparations, like the vaginal estrogen oil-filled capsules. Those are really great too. And those are actually showing less absorption than the vaginal tablets. But anyway, mm-hmm. We can all kind of collectively agree that putting estrogen or testosterone therapy at the site is the way to go. And when it comes to DHEA, same thing. I mean, vaginal DHEA is so beneficial and crucial to what's going on down at that site versus putting it in your body and going through the bloodstream and, down that whole pathway. So yeah, that's some of the education that we're talking about.
I heard someone once say the vagina is the last stop on the train.
That's so
when true. It comes to hormones, that I did not make that up. It was Dr. Casperson, and it cracked me up when she said that. Now I tell all my patients the vagina is the last stop on the train.
That's
so you don't have a roll or patch. You got to put it right in the vagina.
So do you actually have to show the oncologist blood work in your community? Do they want to see that often?
No. Yeah. So I've established good relationships with my oncologist. Like when I first moved to St. Louis from Columbia, I made it a point. I care about women with breast cancer. I'm actually a breast cancer survivor myself. So I really wanted to let the oncologist know that I was here so that their patients wouldn't have to suffer in silence. And so I, have given several talks, grand rounds and things to my oncologists. And I think they appreciate that because I show them the data and then they might feel more comfortable. And, with that said, even when I start patients on any hormones, I personally call the oncologist to make sure they're okay with that. And, it's interesting to me because I know my data, but they know their data. Yeah. And, when it comes to newer things or different things, I'm always interested to learn from them also what's going on with receptor status and things like that. But I think it's really important to reach out to the oncologist so that way you're helping their patients, you're helping them because they don't they don't have time to deal with it and they don't have answers. So, you know, it's a win all the way around. So
no, absolutely. And it's always changing, and you really hit on it. It's very team centric. It's like, we can't be the jack of all trades.
Right.
That's why it's so important. You mentioned moisturizers. Can you talk a little bit about them, and do they kind of complement the estrogen components of things? Can they use them every day? What does that look like for the patient?
Yes. So basically, when I talk to my patients, I differentiate between lubricants and moisturizers. So lubricants are for use during sex. And you can, in general, there are water-based lubes, silicone-based lubes, and oil-based lubes. I highly recommend that women with breast cancer whose hormones are blocked throw away the water-based lubes, because they're really drying. They pull moisture from the tissue. So I recommend silicone-based lubes or oil. There is some concern that silicone or oil could break down condoms, but I know that Uberlube does not do that. So not to throw in like brand names, but you know, that's, I do know that they don't hurt the condom at all. And so you use that. I tell my patients to put some in their hand, put it on the outside of them, which is the vulva, put it on their partner's penis. And it really helps with friction. It helps decrease the friction. Moisturizers are really to be used on a regular basis. So this you can do however much or however little you want. There's no like right or wrong way to do it. It's kind of like if you wash your hands at the sink or, you know, whatever, and then you take a couple pumps of Vaseline intensive care. It's, you know, there's no, you're not going to overdo it. You're not going to overdose.
It's skin. So, it's, yeah. And we forget that, I think.
Sometimes. Yeah. And, you know, I always say, like, if you use too much, your underwear is going to be wet and you'll feel yucky, you know, and if you don't use enough, you won't really notice much of a difference. Mm-hmm. Some people will put some on their finger and put it on the outside of the vagina, like right at the opening or the introitus, where people tend to feel dry. Other people will put some on, you know, every time they go to the bathroom, they pat dry, put some moisturizer on. The other thing you can do, like, is you, like, some of the moisturizers are really oily, you can freeze them and then they're solid and just pop them inside the vagina. And there's several different moisturizers on the market. You really want to try and choose a moisturizer that's within the normal pH range of the vagina, and that's not water-based, because those are drying. So there's so many different ones, you know, and you can even use coconut oil or Crisco.
That's, what are your thoughts on that?
I'm game on that. Like, those are cheap and they work very well.
And it's antibacterial, coconut oil.
Yeah.
Antibacterial properties. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, it smells good and, you know, it's like the beach, but So you can definitely use it. You don't have to get any, you know, super duper fancy ones, unless you just like the way they feel.
Yep. Mm-hmm. What about complementary like things such as herbs and some of that other stuff? I know we get asked that. I get asked that at a lot of my patients. One of the big things I see that recurs for my cancer survivors is just the hot flash and not being able to give estrogen. I know there's so many different things, even on our ISWISH forum right now, a lot of that's going on back and forth. Some anticholinergics and things. So what's kind of some things they can do complementary? And then I'd like to talk a little bit more on the hot flash piece.
Sure. So typically for my breast cancer patients, you know, we don't use estrogen for hot flashes. I tend to use either venlafaxine or gabapentin or oxybutynin. So the venlafaxine is FDA approved as an antidepressant, but it has been shown to help with hot flashes. The gabapentin is typically for neuropathic pain, like nerve pains, but it has been shown to work for hot flashes. And oxybutynin is usually for women with overactive bladder who leak urine if they don't get there in time, but it has been shown to work for hot flashes. So those are some of the medicinal things I try. When it comes to like the natural over-the-counter, you know, the first of all the over-the-counter natural stuff is not regulated. So you don't know exactly what you're getting when you pick up a bottle of, you know, red clover or something like that. And the data is very mixed. So when I say data, I mean like published scientific studies, you know, there's not any, like if you look at, let's say, vitamin E, people sometimes take vitamin E for hot flashes. Like, there are some small studies that show that it might help and others that show that it does nothing. So there isn't anything over the counter that over and over again has been shown to really work. And you always have to be careful with the over-the-counter stuff because it's not regulated. And then the other thing that I think is important is that natural is not always better. So cocaine is natural. Heroin comes from a poppy. Those are not good for you. So, you know, the idea that natural is always better, you have to have some background knowledge to pick and choose which natural things are good for you.
Yes, absolutely. One of the other things I kind of want to focus on too is because we take that whole biopsychosocial approach, I'm kind of changing gears a little bit. How does the patient get their partner involved? Do you encourage them to bring them to the appointment to hear these pieces? I know sometimes you'll get the partner to go to the oncology appointment, but then when it comes to the sex piece, like they're like, they sometimes partners check out.
Yeah. So I think it's incredibly important for a partner to be there because there are a lot of myths about sexuality. And, you know, some women with breast cancer don't even realize that their sexual problem is related to their breast cancer treatment because nobody told them. How would they know? And so, you know, they'll come in and they're like, what's wrong with me? So here's like a case in point. You know, I don't lubricate, I don't get aroused. You know, my partner says, why are you not lubricated? Do you not love me anymore? And the woman says, I do love you, I'm just not lubricated. I don't know what's wrong with me. When really it's not that she's not in love with the partner anymore, not attracted to him. It's just that those hormone blockers or just being in menopause makes it really hard for the vagina to lubricate. So I think education is so, so important. And when partners come, you know, I might say to the patient, oh, this is due to this medicine you're on. And they'll be like, oh my gosh, really? And the husband or, you know, wife or whomever will be like, oh my gosh, I didn't know
that.
Didn't
even know that. Didn't think of it.
And that's why, because it's important for partners to hear this too. And a lot of times they don't come. That's why I created my YouTube channel, because I found that I would be telling patients the same thing over and over again. And they'd be like, oh, really? Well, darn, I wish my partner was here. And so that's what prompted me a couple years ago now, I've been doing it, to put some blurbs up there so that patients can grab their partners and listen to. It's basically my channel. It's just information I always say to my patients. So yes, I think it's important because there's so many sexual myths out there because we do a horrible job at sex education.
And so where do people, my soapbox. Yes.
I mean, where do people learn about sex? Like, how, you know, did anybody ever mention the clitoris to you in seventh grade? No, it's all about not getting pregnant and not getting a sexually transmitted disease. So,
That's a huge soapbox for me. I mean, like, I feel like we are very lacking in sex ed, and most of us are abstinence only states, and they don't even let you talk about it. So how are people supposed to learn? Let's not even go down the road about like LGBTQ population.
Right.
You know, like, how do they learn about it? That's a whole another soapbox, another podcast, another day. But
and I think that's why Heather and I, like, we made this advocacy kind of group, I guess, that's on social media, because we had so many patients saying, like, what is this normal? Like, am I supposed to feel this way? Like, I've had, maybe they were cancer survivors, maybe they weren't, but we have young women coming to us and saying, like, is it supposed to feel like this? And we're like, no, it's not. Yeah. Like, there are people in education, sometimes just teaching the partners too about, you know, what's going on. It kind of gives them a better idea of what the other partner's going through, and they can kind of work through that and talk through that a little bit better. But I'm really interested, Dr. Lynn, you're just like a wealth of, I mean, I could talk to you all day, but you do some work around CBD and that type of thing when it comes to sexual medicine. Can you touch a little bit on what you've seen with CBD use? I know there's a lot of listeners that we have that I don't know the answer to that sometimes. I'm not quite sure.
So that's a really good question. You know, if you look on the internet, CBD fixes everything. And so you have to be careful because nothing fixes everything.
Yes.
But I have looked at this data, and there is data to show that oral CBD is an analgesic. It helps with pain. That's just one thing it helps with. There are no studies looking, there's no published studies looking at CBD as a lubricant for painful sex and dyspareunia, which is just painful sex. But they exist, those products exist. There's like CBD lubes, and there are CBD suppositories, like, you know, with the idea that it helps with menstrual cramps and endometriosis pain and things like that. But I'll tell you, anecdotally, we have seen a couple patients with chronic pelvic pain have, you know, tried everything in the armamentarium, have gone to several vulvar specialists.
Followed the whole algorithm.
The whole algorithm, like treated by excellent physicians, like the best of the best, but still could never make sex not be uncomfortable. And this is totally anecdotal. I have two patients who tried a CBD lube and their pain was so much better. Like one of them told me it went from an 8 to a 2. I'm not making this up. Now, granted, there's huge placebo effect, right? You want something to work, it's going to feel like it worked. But I was sort of like, wow, that's great. So I do know that I don't know if there's more than one, but I know of one trial underway looking at CBD lubes for like vulvodynia type symptoms or vulvar pain. And I'm so excited to see what it shows, because I feel like when it comes to this, the products came way before the scientific research, like way before. And there's also like marijuana suppositories, marijuana-based lubes. We don't have them in our state as of yet. But I know they exist in other states, and there's,
we definitely don't have them here because Georgia's so archaic.
We are able to have THC free CBD products, which is good. And we kind of recommend those to women. Yeah. There are CBD receptors all over the body. Over the body, including the vagina. So I think the work that you're doing is really, really cool and getting that message across to people. Yeah. I've sent people to your YouTube channel just to say, like, she actually knows about CBD and marijuana and THC and stuff like that. So go listen to some of these things. So thank you for that.
So let me just say one thing on that note. I actually did a lecture on women's health and cannabinoids, where we looked at CBD and THC and its effects on pregnancy, lactation, pelvic pain, menstruation. It's all evidence-based. And that is available on cannabinoid medicine studies. You can buy it. And this is a whole women's health lecture on cannabinoids and endocannabinoids. And it gives you like a nice basic background on like where the cannabinoid receptors are. And it's you know, a lecture that's made for people who are not physicians. So if anybody's interested, that's out there.
We'll put that out for sure to our.
Yeah, we'll link that. Definitely. For sure. We get questions. We get actually, it's very interesting how many questions we get on that, probably on a daily basis, if not every other day, about can I use CBD for this or this or this particular women's health condition? So that will be really good information to link here and also on our website.
So Dr. Lynn, I think you have research calling to your name. I think there needs to be an evidence-based study in your practice to get this up.
I know. I would love to.
No, I think that would be awesome. So how do people find you? How do our listeners find you? Where do they find your website? Please tell us more.
Yeah. So my website is Evora, E-V-O-R-A, by B-Y. I know the link will be there. Dr. Becky Lynn, and the doctor is just D-R. So Evora by drbeckylynn.com. That's my website. I do a lot of social media. So my Facebook and Instagram are Becky K. Lynn, MD. My Evora also has a Facebook page, which is at Evora, Center for Menopause.
We'll link them all.
Yeah, it's got so many. My YouTube channel, you just search Dr. Becky Lynn and it'll come up. And I have Twitter, which is at Becky K. Lynn.
Yeah, so it's hard to keep up with all of it is. For sure.
But I'm in Missouri, and I do telehealth all over Missouri. So anybody can reach me that way. And I think.
Can they reach out I know you do some sex counseling groups and some other things. Can you cross state lines? Like if we have Georgians, I know that. It's weird. And
yeah. So my lawyer told me not really, because the line gets blurred between practicing medicine and sexual counseling. So I have to be careful. I do e-health. Which I can do anywhere in the world or across state lines, where I can just talk to you about conditions and things, but I'm not your actual doctor. I don't call in prescriptions for you, but we do offer e-health, and you can do that by yourself if you just have questions, or you can get a group together and make it a girls' night out. That's always kind of fun. We've done Zoom girls' night out. Everyone has their own, you know, glass of wine, asking questions, and it's just a fun way to get good information.
Yep. Maybe we'll have to do that next year for Breast Cancer Support Month, something.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, thank you so, so much. You're amazing. You're like the superstar of all things cancer and sexual health and menopause. And I could just go on and on. And we're grateful to have you on our show. I'm going to let Tara lead us out and tell us what to expect for next month.
All right. Yes. Thank you, Dr. Lynn. That was amazing. I know that we could probably keep going and going and going, but we all have patients to see. So thank you so much. I know
You're
that,
welcome.
You know, this has just been so great. And I know that our listeners are definitely going to be excited about all this information. So that being said, we will put everything will be on social media. We just launched our podcast, which has all of our previous episodes on it, but is now on Apple, Spotify, Google, and iHeartRadio and Pandora, some other big major podcast. So we'll make sure all those are linked here so that whatever podcast channels people listen to, they'll be able to get access to this particular one. And everybody, if you have any questions, Heather and I always encourage people to ask your questions. We can't give medical advice, but we can, you know, point you in the right direction in terms of resources, websites, Dr. Lynn's channels and that types of things. So feel free to, if you want to ask your questions privately, we will respond to them on Facebook. If you want to ask them publicly, that's totally fine too, and we will answer them there. But we really appreciate everybody listening, and stay tuned for next month. It's going to be great. We have a men's health expert coming in to talk about some male sexual issues. So should be very interesting.
I'll have to listen to that.
Yeah.
We focus all on the women. So we thought for Men's Health Month, we needed to get our token male.
Yes. And then in the upcoming future, we'll have some hormone pellet therapy experts. We're going to have a patient actually come on that has vulvodynia, and then some pelvic floor therapists dealing specifically with those types of patients, or oncology patients, post-radiation type patients. So should be really great. But again, thank you so much for today. This was wonderful. And we really, really appreciate it. We know that this is certainly going to touch and help people.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I love it.
You're the best. We appreciate you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you from our patients. I know that, and our listeners.
Yes.